Aloha, Jeff Davis, the solar guy here. A breath of fresh air is what you need on your afternoon drive home, not the boring windbags. Can I say that? Tune in Monday through Friday. That's Lies Tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m., 760 KGU. Aloha.
Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, presents Hawaii's Tomorrow, a series of discussions about Hawaii's business future, led by experts in their respective fields. Today's contributing host is the man himself, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, on this Wednesday, November 14th. Today's topic is an important one, exploring the theme of women in ocean sciences and more broadly in science. We will talk with some amazing women today who have spanning careers and different stages and experiences. Today on the show, we have Mackenzie Manning, biology professor at Kapi'olani Community College, Dr. Sarah Corbis, operations coordinator for the Hawaiian Islands humpback whale National Marine Sanctuary from the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and Alexis Rudd, PhD student at Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, and recently graduated master's student Christina Comfort. In January 2005, the president of Harvard University, Lawrence Summers, stated in a speech that women in science, unlike men, were reluctant to commit to an 80-hour work week, that women had an aptitude for less aptitude for science and math, and that socialization and continued discrimination perpetuate the first two situations. A subsequent apology was issued by Summers, but there was immediate backlash calling for his resignation. Luckily today, the climate for women in science has improved considerably, and there are more support groups now promoting job opportunities and funding for women, like the Association of Women in Science. While we've made great strides, there are still some invisible barriers to success still existing today. First up is Sarah Corbis. Sarah completed her master's degree at San Francisco State University and recently a PhD at Portland State University in 2011, studying population genetics of pantropical spotted dolphins. Sarah currently works, as I mentioned, at the Department of Land and Natural Resources. So, Sarah, you've had a vast experience in science. Tell us about your experiences.
Well, I actually did my undergraduate work on the East Coast and studied marine biology and then moved to Oregon at Hatfield Marine Science Center. I worked there in their marine mammal program for a couple of years and then actually worked in estuarine ecology. So I have a little bit of experience outside of the realm of marine mammals, but then I went back to school, as you mentioned, and worked on spinner dolphins for my master's degree and then studied spotted dolphins for my PhD.
And have you ever felt limited in your field work because of your gender?
Well, I would say that when I worked in estuarine ecology, there were definitely some issues there, depending on the person. I mean, some of the people that I worked with were really great. And then we did have some people who were a little bit more difficult to work with. And when I first started, I did run into a problem with one of the fellows that I worked with would always grab things away from me. Like, we'd be out in the field, be pulling in an anchor or doing something like that, and he'd grab it. You know, and he didn't do that with the guys. So I find, you know, I'd be annoyed with him because he grabbed something from me. He'd be annoyed with me because he was trying to help. And so we finally had to come to an understanding. You know, I think the communication was really important there, that I said, you know, if you want to help, maybe just ask me if I need help first, and if I need help, then I'll say, yes, I need help. So once we kind of got over that first initial, his inclination to be assisting me all the time, we actually worked together much better after that. I do have a friend, though, who works on the East Coast in marine mammal science, who ran into one of those big barrier problems where back in 2009, when she got pregnant, you know, she went into her boss and said, well, you know, I'm pregnant. Let's work out something to figure out how we're going to logistically deal with this. And his first response was, you are fired, which is, of course, I mean, we know that it's not really legal to do that, but ultimately, I mean, she just said to him, well, I'll let you think about that for a few days and we can talk about it again. And of course, she didn't get fired. But the fact that it would be the first thing that someone would say, it would be their inclination, is definitely a concern as far as, you know, women working in the field.
Well, especially in marine science, you know, when you are doing field work, it often requires quite a bit of strength. And, you know, you're out on boats and sometimes in really rough weather and treacherous conditions. And so it's interesting how that perpetuates. So now, working in a management sense, you're working with the Department of Land and Natural Resources now. Have you ever felt any challenges there?
Well, I think that for the most part, I've not found that there are any major problems. I think that in general, there can be issues with women and pay and things. We know that over, you know, in the real world, that women get paid less for the same work as a general rule. And again, that's probably something I would say I saw more when I was working in estuarine ecology. And I actually had a friend too who had an instance where she was told that she wasn't going to be offered a job because she lived with her boyfriend and she didn't need the job as much. Which is not really, again, you're not supposed to say that, obviously. But, you know, knowing that that mindset exists. I would say my experience with the state of Hawaii, though, is I've had a pretty good experience over there, and I'm enjoying working with everybody over there.
And so a lot of science students are now transferring into management. I think, you know, that line was more distinguished 10 years ago. Now a lot of science students are transferring into management and other jobs like education. Why do you think that is?
I think it's job stability, really. I think that it's hard to work in academia now, particularly in this economic climate. When you look at this, it's daunting. You know, people here are just finishing their degrees. They say, okay, I could go work at a university, but now I have to generate the money to create an entire lab, you know, and I have to not only be a grant writer, but I have to produce research and I have to teach. And this becomes really challenging. I don't think it's really a man or woman issue there. I think it's just the economic climate makes it really difficult. So people are looking for work that they can feel more confident that they're going to get a salary for.
And going through school or even in present day now, have you had any female science role models?
I have. Actually, growing up, my aunt is a neurophysiologist, and she was very instrumental, I think, in my deciding to go into science in the first place. And she also raised two really great children, and my uncle is really awesome, and he's a lawyer, and it worked out really well for them. And so I felt like I had that potential, because I actually grew up in a household where my dad wasn't necessarily so supportive of that. So it was kind of an either or. You can be a scientist. You're perfectly capable. Any woman is. But you should either be a scientist or have a family. And I always kind of struggled with that. And I think most people do. I mean, nowadays, it's not even just a woman question. It's really a family question of how much time can you spend with your family when you choose to have a career that's rather demanding. And I'd like to hope that over time we'll see the infrastructure change a little bit in terms of how business is run and how jobs are structured so that men and women can have more time to spend with their families. But the fact that my aunt was able to do that and do it so successfully was definitely an inspiration to me.
I have so much respect for women that are working and raising families. It is so much work, and that balancing role is really difficult. So in balancing roles as well, you know, we just mentioned scientists now have more to handle. They're often asked now to be involved with management decisions or having research that's more applied to policy. What role do you think scientists have in that arena?
Well, I definitely think now that I'm working in management and policy that it's really important as a scientist to give your expertise to those people. I mean, it's not that every project you do has to be directed at a management question. But, you know, no one's an expert on everything. So if you have an expertise and you have information that can be applied to management, you really, I think, have an obligation to actively try to get that information to the people who are making those decisions and also to the public. I think that's something we forget a lot as scientists in academia. We kind of get in our own little academic place and we write papers and we go to conferences, but we don't always get out into the public and talk about our research. And that's important to supporting policy as well.
And coming out on radio shows and promoting your science.
That's right.
So one last question before we take a pause here. What aspirations do you have for the future? I mean, where do you see yourself in 15 years?
You know, that's a really tough question to answer. I did just get married recently. So my husband and I are talking about starting a family. And so my hope is that I'll continue to move forward in my career and, you know, move up a little higher than I am now. You know, you start at the bottom every time you start. So I'd like to be involved in more policy and science. I really want to keep my hand in the research. That's really important to me, and hopefully work with students as well. And I do see us starting a family and making that work. I think we can do it.
Well, we should start like a marine science nanny service for all the marine science cakey running around there.
It's not a bad idea.
Sarah, thanks for making some time to share your story with us. We'll continue with Mackenzie Manning after a traffic break. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, R&R Solar and Rolf Chris, Kona Red, Edible Hawaiian Islands, and Inter-Island Solar Supply and Cully Judd.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Had a stall in town earlier. That's why traffic Evabound is so slow. It starts slowing down at UH. If you're coming in from the west, you can expect a slowdown when you get into the Middle Street merge. The H1 is going to be slow from there to the Punahou exit. If you're going west, the H1 is backed up on the west end of the airport viaduct. The Moanalua slows at Moanalua Gardens. On Moanalua Road, an accident by Kaiser and a stall on the H1 by the Waipahu exit.
The sun is the root source of energy in food, fossil fuels, and wind energy. The clearest use of the sun's energy is solar power. Bankyu Solar brings to Hawaii a technological breakthrough that maximizes the power from each solar module. With our AC Unison system, Bankyu Solar's AC Unison modules have microinverters on each module that converts DC electricity to AC electricity, allowing your system to produce 5 to 25% more power than other solar systems. It's cost-effective, has a 25-year warranty and an attractive all-black design. The AUO BenQ Solar Company is one of the most trusted companies in the solar industry. With state and federal incentives in place and utility rates going up, now is the time to generate your own electricity with a beautiful BenQ solar system. It looks great, produces more power than standard solar systems, and saves you money in the process. Call 554-7200 for your local BenQ solar installer and enjoy your savings now.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dean Okimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opili'oahu.com.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the Whole House Fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal filling in for Jeff Davis. With us now is Mackenzie Manning, a biology teacher at Kapiolani Community College. Mackenzie, you've been teaching biology and marine biology for 8 years now, both to high school students through the NOAA BWET PACES program at Windward Community College, and now to college-level students. So, in your time that you've been doing this, what trends do you see with your science students?
Hi, Carly. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
Well, I've been at Kapi'olani Community College for, I think I'm starting my fourth year now, and I teach majors biology. So this is a two-semester track that any student who wants to do biological science, they have to take this before they can take any upper division biological science courses. And what I notice most is a shift in career pathways. Most of my students profess that they're pre-med or pre-farm majors, and it's usually only a few that are into more of the natural sciences like marine biology, ecology, botany, anything that might be natural resource management or other pathways that involve research or work in more natural systems.
And when you're in the classroom, have you noticed any inequalities?
Well, so we have a pretty strong STEM program at Kapi'olani Community College.
And can you explain what STEM is?
Sure. It's the science, technology, engineering, and math pathway. We actually, since Kapi'olani Community College has associate's degrees, two-year degrees, and we also have a lot of students that transfer to UH Manoa and UH Hilo, we've developed this associate's in science in the natural science degree that's kind of like a transfer degree. So they can transfer as sophomores right into their chosen major, whether it be engineering or biological science or chemistry or physics. What I've noticed, of all the students we have enrolled as a STEM major, there's about 800 of them. It's pretty much half female, half male, so with maybe even a little bit more female than male STEM majors. But I think when you start to separate that out by biology or physics or math or engineering, most of those females are enrolled under a biological concentration. And we're still, I think, where the discrepancy is in the more physical sciences, like mathematics and physics and pre-engineering, for sure.
And I know you recently have been trying to get a marine option program at Kapi'olani Community College. Can you explain what the MOP, or marine option program, is and how that helps STEM students?
Okay. The MOP program, or Marine Options Program, was initiated by UH Manoa in 1970. Since then, it's grown to all UH campuses, and there's a really strong program at Manoa still, as well as Hilo. It's never really taken off at KCC, unfortunately, and so I'm trying to reinvigorate the MOP program at KCC, since we're primarily a transfer institution that serves UH Manoa and UH Hilo. I feel like it would benefit students to get an early start on a marine science concentration, if that's what they're interested in, at the community college level, and then transfer over into the UH system MOP program at Hilo or at Manoa.
And do you think the MOP program can generate more interest in marine sciences, I guess, against the whole student body, but more importantly, females, given our topic today?
Yeah, so I guess I should explain a little bit more about it. It's kind of equivalent to like a minor or an academic subject certificate, where you take classes that are specific to the marine environment in some way, shape, or form, but you don't have to be a science major to do the marine option program. So it can really benefit you if you want to be a business major or tourism or culinary, to have kind of an edge in the marine environment, since we live in Hawaii and we're so interconnected with the marine environment. So I think in that respect, it can garner interest, not just females, but everybody, especially students that are from Hawaii and have a more intimate knowledge of marine habitats around Hawaii. We have a lot of people that work in, government agencies that manage these marine resources, but not a lot that are born and raised here and have kind of that intimate relationship with the coastal habitat. So it'd be nice to get not just more females, but everybody involved that's from here in MOP and caring more about the marine environment.
Well, I think we're all a little biased here, all being in marine science, but I think it's the best career in the world, personally. But you're also running a class next semester, not related to Marine Option Program, but it's somewhat related in that it's a Communicating Ocean Sciences course, and that's a partnership with COSI, so I will be involved in that with you, and actually I'm looking forward to it. Do you think that the Communicating Ocean Sciences class is important for science students, especially given the fact that scientists are being asked more to take on management and education roles?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great course next semester at KCC, and I'm excited to co-teach it with you too, Carr. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much intended for students who are interested in understanding science as more of an explanatory process, and we use ocean sciences as the framework under which to explain science and better communicate science. I think in the process of learning how those skills, you also yourself become more aware of how you learn science. So it's going to be a really fun class that's very interactive, a lot of group projects, and a lot of just thinking about how people think about science and communicating. Yeah.
And I guess lastly, both as a scientist and as a teacher, what obstacles have you had to overcome when you were a student and now in your career?
Okay, yeah, we were just all talking about this at the last break. And in terms of being a student, I can't say that anything other than the normal graduate rundown that you go through when you're in graduate school. I was a field tech for a couple years in between undergrad and grad, and I had a similar experience where I was working with an older gentleman who was very wary of letting me be in charge of any of the equipment on the vessel that we would work on, and it took months for me to earn his trust. And even then, he would come in and try to help me with things or, you know, get involved when he didn't need to. And so, that's pretty much the one difference I did feel. But for the most part, I think as an educator, I feel like as a woman, it's kind of expected that I take on a more of a counseling and a mentorship role. So students, I think maybe, and I don't know if it's me or if it's because I'm a female or maybe a little bit of both, but I think students come very readily asking for advice, career advice, school advice, project advice, research advice, more so maybe than what's expected of other instructors.
Well, and I've seen you teach many times, and you are a very engaged and passionate educator. You know, you're very involved with your students, and you definitely go that extra mile. Did you find that there was important female role models for you when you were going through school?
My graduate advisor was really awesome. She wasn't so much of a role model as she helped shape my experience and allowed me maybe to become who I am and be the person, kind of find my path after grad school. But I had a mentor, definitely, Malia Rivera. She was a boss of mine when I went over into education and kind of got away from research a little bit. And she's from here, from Kaneohe, and she very much helped me to embody this idea of really uplifting Hawaii's local population in the sciences. And I feel really committed to that effort, actually.
Well, thanks, Kenzie. You do so much, and I know that you have a huge student base that really appreciates your teaching style. If you have an experience, you know, some of our listeners, maybe you're in sciences or marine science, or just have something to say about and experience being a female in the workplace, please feel free to call us at 808-296-5467. We'll be back in just a few moments here. Want to acknowledge our sponsors, Natural Energy Lab, Honolulu Weekly, Sabrina's Restaurant, Kanalea Ukulele, Hawaii's Nanotech Glass Coating, and Focused Energy.
KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
The Windward commute is good this afternoon, and traffic going east is normal. We are starting to see a little slowdown as you approach Ainakoa at the end of the freeway. Going west, typical, the Moana Lua slows when you get to the Pu'uloa Road overpass. The H1 slows at the airport on-ramp on the viaduct. Inbound traffic from the west slows when you get to the Middle Street merge. And if you're coming in from the east side, you're going to get into some slow traffic by the university.
Want to go green for your home or business? Hawaii Community Reinvestment Corporation introduces its new Green Sun Hawaii program, an innovative public-private partnership to make energy improvements affordable for everyone. Green Sun Hawaii gives you the power to significantly reduce your utility bill. Visit Hawaii National Bank or other participating lenders or one of the many authorized energy contractors for more information. Or visit greensunhawaii.com and click on the easy-to-use loan application.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
The sun is the root source of energy in food, fossil fuels, and wind energy. The clearest use of the sun's energy is solar power. BanQu Solar brings to Hawaii a technological breakthrough that maximizes the power from each solar module. With our AC Unison system, BanQ Solar's AC Unison modules have microinverters on each module that converts DC electricity to AC electricity, allowing your system to produce 5 to 25% more power than other solar systems. It's cost-effective, has a 25-year warranty and an attractive all-black design. The AUO BenQ Solar Company is one of the most trusted companies in the solar industry. With state and federal incentives in place and utility rates going up, now is the time to generate your own electricity with a beautiful BenQ solar system. It looks great, produces more power than standard solar systems, and saves you money in the process. Call 554-7200 for your local BenQ solar installer and enjoy your savings now.
Aloha! This is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. The solar industry has changed enormously in the last 3 years. So many companies have entered the market that one of the most asked questions I hear is, what makes your company different? Solar Services Hawaii has been serving Oahu and neighbor islands for more than 20 years. Solar Services was awarded the best inspection rate statewide from the Hot Water Rebate Program. We were number one. Solar Services is a local family company. We recognize the need for service with Aloha. I personally have given a class for the IRS. I've lectured many, including two luncheons with the National Association of Tax Preparers. Roof penetration and tax issues are my focus. For all solar products, meaning hot water, photovoltaic, pool and spa heating, solar pool pumps, solar attic fans, you name it. We specialize in photovoltaics and hot water, and of course, a free estimate is available. Just call my phone, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You have a great day and aloha.
This is Chief Louis Kealoha of the Honolulu Police Department. As part of the HPD's Safer Roads program, our officers are enforcing traffic laws 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. But we need your help. A few common sense choices can make a big difference. Stay within posted speed limits, use a hands-free cell phone device when driving, look out for pedestrians, and have a designated driver if you drink. Together, we can make Oahu's road safer and save lives. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. With me now are graduate students Alexis Rudd and Christina Comfort from the University of Hawaii. Alexis is a PhD student at the University of Hawaii Zoology Department, and does research on whales, dolphins, and underwater sound at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. She is also the treasurer of Graduate Women in Sciences Hawaii chapter, and also was chair of the nominating committee for the national organization. Quite an accomplishment. Christina also finished her master's recently in oceanography, where she studied the ecology of deep water sharks. She is currently working in the Microbial Oceanography Outreach and Education Center, so CMOR, at the University of Hawaii. You girls are quite accomplished at your age, so congratulations. Alexis, let's start with you. What has your experience been like at the University of Hawaii?
Hi. So my experience at the University of Hawaii is that there's a pretty equal percentage of women and men in the department as students. But what you see is that there are fewer professors that are women than there are men. And I think that's partly to do with something that people call the leaky pipeline that Sarah was talking about earlier. As you go through each step of a science education, women are leaking out at every step. And one of the big steps that women leak out of is the step between the PhD and becoming a professional in academia. And part of that has to do with what we were already discussing. Women want to have families, have children, and a lot of the burden of having children, not that it's a burden because children are awesome, is on the women just because of biology. Like, the woman is pregnant, you know, it makes a lot of sense for her to take a lot of that responsibility. And so when you get to be a graduate student, a lot of the people who are teaching you are not women. So I think that that is a problem.
And have you personally felt that pressure or have considered those concerns for yourself?
I have, and, you know, it's not something that I really feel ready to deal with right now, but it's sort of like there are so many hoops that you have to jump through to be an academic that I think a lot of women leave because they don't want to jump through that many hoops. Like, it's easier and less complicated sometimes to have a job where people take into account the fact that you might want to take leave to take care of your children or to have a baby or something like that, instead of having a reaction like Sarah's friend's boss did, oh, you're fired. You know, that's just something that people don't want to deal with, and so they just leave academia.
And forget the field work. I can't even imagine trying to write a thesis with a little one in tow.
Actually, I have a friend that found out that she was pregnant on a research cruise. She was really, really sick. And it turned out that she was having morning sickness.
And what about you, Christina? What's your experience been like?
Yeah, I would agree with everything Alexis said about the population. Definitely in the oceanography department as well, it's about evenly split, and even, I think, some more women as students, and very few professors are women. So a lot of the female students in oceanography are always looking for female mentors, and there's a little bit of dissatisfaction, I think, that we, you know, maybe don't have access to as many female professors as mentors as we would like. And I've been doing a little bit of research on my own about the divide or the gender split on the professor level. And there's some studies looking at the milestones for gaining tenure and also kind of a woman's biology. And, you know, if you're going to start a family, when does that have to happen? And at the same time is when you're supposed to be producing lots and lots of research and lots of publications. And I think it's a little bit biased towards males in terms of achieving those milestones towards getting tenure.
And do either of you have a particular mentor or professor who has been particularly encouraging of you in marine science?
I've been really lucky. My Aunt Marie is a professor at the University of, I'm going to get this wrong, New Mexico in nursing. And she's been a really great mentor. To have somebody who I can talk to about things like comprehensive exams and my committee and not have to explain in detail what those things are. When I talk to my mom about that kind of stuff, it's really difficult to explain to her what my frustrations or what what I'm going through because I have to explain so much what the thing is that I'm having problems with. And then I have a committee member named Eva Marino Sal in the Ocean Engineering Department, and she is just amazing. She's a female professor in a department that is mostly male and has very few women's bathrooms, and she's just very, very inspiring to me.
I would say that some of my most supportive mentors have actually been the staff at a field station I used to work at. I worked at the Bimini Biological Field Station in the Bahamas for a little while before I came to UH. And at that station, it's a really energetic and vibrant group of people, and it's also split about half and half women to men. And I had the opportunity to do a lot of work in the field with all female crew, and that was it was a really nice way to kind of feel confident, and I think it prepared me for my work at UH a little bit, where I work actually with an all-male crew now, and just in terms of feeling confident and feeling like I have the experience and, you know, can say, like, no, I don't need help with this, or just can be, you know, don't have to feel like there's any pressure coming from the guys on the crew. But they're always really, really open and respectful anyway. I have a great team.
So it sounds like you both have had a lot of positive experiences. Have you encountered any experiences that were negative or opposite of what you just described?
Well, it's a little hard to talk about that on the radio because I'm still a student, but I have had negative experiences. I've had a lot of problems with, I have been told before that I need to be careful of my ovaries when I'm lifting heavy objects, which was just, I don't even have the words to describe how annoying that was. And I actually, one of the other things that I did that people worried more about me than it ended up needing to be worried about was I spent 3 days every 2 weeks for a year and a half on a tugboat, and the entire tugboat crew was male, and everybody was very worried about a woman being out there all alone with all these guys on the tugboat, but I never had a single problem. All the guys were great, and so I think that people's expectations are sometimes more of a problem than the reality of women, because we can really go out there, we can work with men, and there aren't as many problems as sometimes people think that there are going to be.
Well, it's funny, I've almost had the opposite, where I feel like I need to overcompensate sometimes for feeling weak. And, you know, I'm not a petite lady, so I'll oftentimes lift things heavier or, you know, try just a little bit harder. That overextends myself to where it's not safe to be lifting something that heavy, but I feel like, you know what, I'm a female, I can do this, I'm going to pick it up anyways. And so I don't know, Christina, have you ever had any situation like that?
Well, as I was saying before, my lab crew is all men, and I've never had any problems working with them. I don't think anyone around me has been too worried about it. But I have felt uncomfortable in some situations. I've actually not gone out on a couple of research trips that were with commercial fishing boats because of, you know, it's a crew of a lot of strangers and all males who I don't know, plus maybe one or two of my colleagues, and there's absolutely zero privacy. So in that instance, I think that there's no bathroom on the boat. There's no closed doors, really. And I think it's a little bit limiting for women to go on those kind of platforms to use as a research method, whereas, like, some of the guys in my lab are much more comfortable and can easily use that research opportunity. But, I mean, coming from the commercial industry, that's something a little hard to change in terms of the infrastructure on the boats.
That reminds me very much of Dr. Sylvia Earle's story, and she's actually one of my marine science female role models. In 1969, she applied to live underwater for 6 weeks conducting research with a team of aquanauts, and she was declined because at that time it was unforeseeable that men and women would work together in such close quarters. However, they did offer her her own separate female team and made her team leader on that project. And what was so groundbreaking is, about that is that their work showing the effects of pollution on coral reefs demonstrated that women were, you know, equally capable in the field. And from that, NASA actually opened its astronaut program to females. So I love that story, and that kind of reminded me of that. We'll just take a quick pause here. I want to continue talking with you guys about this subject, and I want to talk a little bit about your involvement more, Alexis. Let's take a moment here, acknowledge some of our sponsors, Hawaiian Legacy Hardwares, Tom Moffitt Productions, Island Cooling, UH Federal Credit Union, the Manila Hotel, and Lumen Solar LLC.
760 KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
It's getting slower going west on the H1 because of a stall at the Radford pedestrian overpass. It's backed up now to the commuter terminal on the airport viaduct. If you're going out on the Moanalua, it slows at Fort Shafter Flats. The heavy stuff lets up at the Waimalu Pearl City exit when you get out there. No problems are reported to the windward side. Going east, the usual slowdown when you get alongside Kahala Mall, and then no problems on out Kalani Anaole Highway.
Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you a $100 call-off bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
The sun is the root source of energy in food, fossil fuels, and wind energy. The clearest use of the sun's energy is solar power. BanQ Solar brings to Hawaii a technological breakthrough that maximizes the power from each solar module. With our AC Unison system, BanQ Solar's AC Unison modules have microinverters on each module that converts DC electricity to AC electricity, allowing your system to produce 5 to 25% more power than other solar systems. It's cost-effective, has a 25-year warranty, and an attractive all-black design. The AUO BenQ Solar Company is one of the most trusted companies in the solar industry. With state and federal incentives in place and utility rates going up, now is the time to generate your own electricity with a beautiful BenQ solar system. It looks great, produces more power than standard solar systems, and saves you money in the process. Call 554-7200 for your local BenQ solar installer and enjoy your savings now.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science girl, and we're talking today about a very important issue, women in marine science. I'd like to come back to Christina and Alexis, who are both graduate students and have been at the University of Hawaii. Now, Alexis, you've been very involved in your university experience with the Graduate Women in Science program. Can you tell us a little about that?
Okay, so Graduate Women in Science, which we call GWIS, is a women's group for basically anybody who supports women in science. And our mission is to empower women in science. And so our chapter in Hawaii does a lot of outreach events. For example, on November 30th, we're working with the Institute for Human Services. And we're going to one of the homeless shelters in Honolulu. And we're doing a science night for the homeless kids and their families there. So we set up a bunch of tables, and we get to talk to the kids about what they're doing. And GWIS also is sort of a support system for women in sciences. So if you're having problems with your advisor or with any kind of like pay disparity, you can come to other women in science and talk to them about how maybe it would be a good way to handle this problem and get advice about what they've done in the past. So it's just a really great group to be part of.
And I'm glad you brought up that pay disparity, because that's one of the biggest arguments that we haven't talked about yet today, and that's equal funding opportunities and pay scales. Have any of you had any experiences, good or bad, with that?
Well, I actually did have one of those things happen. Like, you don't really think it's going to happen in today, you know, you hear about this stuff, or you think it's people who aren't professionals who have this problem. But when I was early in my career, I did have a job where my supervisor left and I took over his responsibilities. But where I was working, they decided to give the title that he had to another person who did different work and wasn't actually changing their work, which didn't bother me as far as the title was concerned. But then I found out that that fellow was being given a bigger raise than I was when he wasn't changing his job in any way, and I was taking on a higher level of responsibility. So I, you know, it's one of those things where it's really tough to say this is directly sexist. I mean, maybe my boss was just, I don't know, dumb. But I did go, since I found out about it, I went to him. I said, you know, this is unacceptable to me. You can't give this guy more money than me. He's not doing more work. And so first he tried to convince me that the guy was more qualified. And I said, no, I've known him since he was in college after I graduated. So I know that that's not the case. So I did actually get the same raise. And I did tell them, like, I want the same money or I'm out of here. And so I wasn't bluffing, too. I mean, that's the thing, depending on your level of responsibility. You know, I was just out of school. I didn't really have any responsibility to anybody. I didn't have a mortgage to pay. I didn't have a kid to take care of. I could say, look, I'm demanding this. But that's a bigger problem when you have other responsibilities to meet, and then you have to try and fight for a salary. That can be challenging.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, is negotiating skills. And that's not often something that's taught or learned firsthand. And it seems that females need to have those negotiating skills a little bit more in order to reach an equal pay level, particularly when you get to higher management or tenure track positions. So, Christina, going back to you, as your experience been a positive one, it seems like, for the most part. What advice would you have for other female students or younger girls out there that are interested in entering the sciences?
I think a lot of the advice is applicable to anyone wanting to enter the sciences. Things like making sure, if you want to be a marine biologist, just knowing ahead of time that you really need a lot of physics and chemistry and math, which is really, really important, and sometimes that kind of falls by the wayside if you have your heart set on researching fish or coral. But it's really, really important. I think also for girls in particular, it's helpful when you're going into this kind of career to think about, like, all the other kinds of things you might need to do in the field. And, you know, like, it's great to be comfortable with tools. It's great to know how to solder. It's great to know a little bit about basic electronics and maybe how to repair an engine. Like, things that you wouldn't normally think about are just good to kind of have on the radar.
I actually just took a NOAA motor operations boating course, and we learned some basic mechanics on the boat engines. Mm-hmm. And it amazed me how similar they were to car engines. And, you know, I feel like that knowledge I'm going to take now and be able to troubleshoot with my car, which is an experience or a skill that is I'm so excited to have. How about you, Alexis? What advice would you have for other students?
I have to second that, soldering rocks. I just want to tell girls that are interested in doing marine biology that you really can do anything that you set your mind to, as long as you work hard enough. And I think it's important to look for a mentor who you can look up to and go to for advice. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone at your university. You can find someone who does something similar to what you want at another university. And the other thing is, I just want to kind of echo what Sarah just said. Sometimes you really just need to speak up for yourself and say, look, what's happening here isn't really right. And maybe you didn't notice that you were doing this thing, so I'm going to point it out to you. Because people don't always realize that what they're doing isn't really kosher.
And have any of you had experiences where you've spoken up and it's made an effective difference in what you're doing? No? Okay. Well, you know, that's okay. I think I agree with you, Alexis. It is important to be outspoken. I mean, you know, you have to balance it, too. You don't want to be running your mouth all the time. But when you're not being treated equally or fairly, it is really important to be able to communicate that. Have you ever felt self-conscious in what you're doing in science, whether it's with a skill level or speaking at all to a group?
So I just wanted to answer your last question since we all just laughed. But I think that sometimes women feel... I've never really had an experience where I felt like I was being paid unfairly compared to a guy or something. But I do think that sometimes women are less likely to want to speak up when they are being pressured to do more work than they really need to. And this is part of just the general graduate student experience. But women might not say, like, no, I'm not going to work an extra 10 hours a week. So that's one of the reasons why it's important to speak up.
Yeah, I have another story, actually, which I didn't think of right away. But I have a friend of mine who's also a woman in marine science, and she was having some issues with sexual harassment from older male colleagues, and she was able to pull together some of her friends and actually go and talk to gender equity specialists, and that actually really made a difference. And they were able to organize a lot of workshops, which helped provide students, particularly female students, with the resources and the knowledge to address those kind of problems. So it was definitely a success story in terms of, you know, just getting some more conversation going about that problem.
And this question is for all of you today. Do you feel comfortable in the roles that you're playing now? And is there anything you'd want to do to make more ease in your career choice? Sorry, that didn't make any sense. Are you comfortable with where you are today, basically, is what I'm trying to get at?
Well, I guess speaking from a little further into the career than graduate school, I would say I do feel comfortable, but I also have a certain amount of apprehension about starting a family because that is the place that I am in my life now. And I worry about walking into work and saying I'm pregnant and what will happen. Now, my supervisor is also a woman and is very family oriented, and that's really great. And I don't think she would be delighted for me. But I don't know how that works up the chain and what happens and what the expectations are. And I'm nervous to ask because I don't want people to think, oh, she's going to get pregnant. Now we got to start doing something about this or whatever. Like, I can't quite figure out what the best approach is to prepare at work while not undermining my ability to move forward. I wouldn't want to not be considered someone who's going to move up the chain because now I'm doing this other thing.
And Kenzie, what about you? In the tenure track position?
I think that the tenure track definitely gives you a sense of security, at least in the job security. But there's, for me, at the community college level, I mean, we teach 5 and 6 classes a semester, and it's an enormous workload, and I work a lot at home, and sometimes I sit and think when I'm up at like 11:30 at night, still grading or updating a lecture, where I'd have time for a family, but I want one too, you know?
Well, you guys have all been so open and honest with this important topic today. I want to thank our panel for sharing their trials and tribulations of being a female in marine science, and acknowledge Hawaii's new Kosi Island Earth program, who helped sponsor today. I'd also like to acknowledge a few other sponsors: D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, Solar Services Hawaii, Blue Planet Foundation, Young Brothers, Green Sun Hawaii. I'd like to leave you all with one last thought, and that's from my role model, Sylvia Earle. Not only did she have a PhD in marine botany and a successful marine science career, earning the title Her Deepness, but she was also able to raise 2 children at the same time. So lots of respect for her there. I'm Carly Weiner. Thanks for listening. Now get out there and enjoy.